Today we're talking about creativity. Can it be taught? Can it be measured? We're going to look at one author's idea for helping entrepreneurs break the habit of fearing failure. And we're going to revisit the process of improvisation as we discussed with jazz saxophonist Eric DeFade. Eric and I started out on this project together, but you can hear his entire interview in episode 6. Welcome, music lovers. This is Accelerando, a podcast about ideas and stories all about music. My name is Paula Tuttle. I'm a cellist, creator of Chambersite, producer of concerts, and this podcast. We'll explore behind the scenes the professional life in music, but the podcast is for anyone curious about music and musicians' careers. Sarnoff Mednick created a psychology test in the 60s called the Remote Association Test, or RAT, and it identified creativity as a product of associative memory. So the test is still used today in a study of creativity. People are given three words and asked if there is a link: salt, deep, foam. The test measures how long until people get the answer, which is C, S-E-A, sea salt, deep sea, sea foam. So there you have it. Scientists have accepted the RAT test as a way to test creativity. But wait, there's more. The RAT test can also introduce things that slow down or speed up someone's timing. They can improve or lower the score. For example, if you redo the test, your timing improves. So repetition increases the flow of creativity. So scores will change due to things like mood or strains or distractions. If someone is given a list of words while a siren is blaring or the print is really small, the timing will be slower. Another variant could be to make the subject happy by telling them their son or someone they care about just won first place in competition. Their association time gets faster. This is called priming. Priming is a term that is used when a factor is intended to manipulate or affect the outcome. Priming doesn't just affect creativity, but it was used in the RAT experiment for that purpose. So as musicians, we think of creativity from a less scientific vantage point, but there is a lot to be gained by realizing our creativity can be stifled by our environment. It's good to know that there is scientific evidence that says that creativity flows when we are happy, the music is more legible, and music is familiar through repetition. Great, we all had an intuitive idea about this, so let's get real about creativity for those of us who do it for a living. Some of us classical musicians venture into improvisation, but to many of us, it's a dark world, scary and uninviting, even though we have good friends that make a living improvising on their instruments. When classical musicians first take on improvisation, it feels like we're breaking something before putting it back together. We really should be introduced to improv in our early lessons, so it's not so foreign to us. I think to anyone that improvisation is new to, it feels like a lot of pressure creating a composition now, or write a book. Here's chapter one, start typing. The problem with this approach is too much focus on the outcome. So I asked Eric how he helps people who never studied improv, how he introduces it.
First, I tell them that no one's played a perfect solo yet. There are songs that I've played, without exaggeration, probably 10,000 times, and I'm still not ultra happy with everything that I've done with it so far. It's a total process of playing more and more and more. You really have to do it often. You have to listen to it. It's like any language. You have to speak it. You have to listen to it spoken. You have to hear it in context. And then it really starts to make sense. You know, don't feel like you're trying to make any history with your first solo. Just try to play with a good feel, with a good sound. You know, you're a good student. You're already in tune. You already have good technique. Just make that all work to your advantage and try to relax with it.
Clearly, Eric has done this with a lot of people and he knows how hard it is for people. So then I asked him the very first steps to getting your feet wet. Listen to his idea.
I tell them that any excerpt book that they have or any exercise, technical or otherwise, that they've ever played can be used as improvisational material. And a lot of them find this to be good news automatically because I think there's an intimidation factor about the improvisation process. It doesn't really have to be that way. So for my saxophone students, I show them how to use the exercises as a shape rather than just a specific sort of exercise. And then we attach chord symbols throughout the exercise and give them chord scales to go along with the corresponding intervallic aspects of the exercise.
I just love this idea, and I can't wait to go home and try this with a Pauperie tutor, a Piotti Caprice. So for the students that are pretty comfortable with improvising, they've done it a few times, he suggests this.
Yeah, I think everybody arrives at it in a different way as far as this whole process, and also to reiterate to them that they're not going to get it all at once, not to open up too many different concepts at the same time. You know, if you're working on, take a key a week, you know, a key center per week, just to kind of break everything down so it doesn't seem like this huge undertaking that's impossible. It needs to be one step at a time.
I asked Eric what he thought were the best circumstances for him to be creative in. Because let's face it, if you do it all the time, you know how you want to set up your room or your audience or your venue. Here's what he said.
Ideally, for me, the best thing that really excites me about playing is when I'm with a collection of really good musicians. I can see the crowd. They can see me. I don't have to rely too heavily on technology as far as the amplification and the monitoring system. I like to be playing as acoustic as possible, getting something back from the room. And that way, I really feel like I'm freed up to create.
So it's not just me saying this. You hear this all the time. The problem most people have is being too focused on the outcome. Creativity is about pushing to the edges, being ready to break rules, and being prepared to fail. We actually need to practice failing if we are going to maximize our creativity or anything we do. A trapeze artist has to practice falling into the net before he can perform without a net. When you take your first river kayak lesson, you learn how to get out of an overturned kayak long before going through rapids. If you've ever done this, you know how disorienting it is to pull the kayak skirt off the kayak, get out while upside down and holding your breath. Practicing failure is practical in all pursuits. Scientists build failure into the scientific method. Start with a theory, test it, report your findings. Okay, musicians probably need a refresher on the scientific method, so we're not going there. So let's try this. Ask yourself, what would you invent if you knew it would fail, but you wanted to see how it would fail? That is the essence of what the scientific method does. Failure is part of the question. It leaves the door open to possibilities, even or maybe especially ones that fail. Because if you embrace the ones that fail, you are more likely to have success. Sir Ken Robison, in his well-known TED Talk, says, "If you aren't prepared to fail, you'll never create anything worthwhile." I want to share with you something that really illustrates this well. At the Eastman School of Music, my classmate Ellen Rowe did something. She created a jazz band. She called it the New Jazz Ensemble, but it was GNU as opposed to NEW, one of the official jazz ensembles of the Eastman School of Music. And Eastman had an excellent jazz department, and many people might not know how prestigious it was. Ray Burnwright was the director, and he wrote some famous jingles like Winston Tastes Good Like a Cigarette Should. Chuck Mangione was seen walking the halls regularly, and a lot of great jazz players came there and studied both jazz and legit. So Ellen created a jazz ensemble for musicians playing the wrong instruments. The GNU Jazz Ensemble's requirement to be in the band was you had to play an instrument that wasn't your major instrument and actually can only be something you started playing while you came to Eastman. So the really fun part of their concerts were the solos, the improvisations. The worse they were, the better they were. It was an exercise in failure. It made the audiences smile and laugh. Ellen created it for fun, but the concerts became a big hit. This is how creativity actually works. Plan to fail, so that the road to success becomes available. So a big part of creativity has to be humility. And I asked Eric what it's like being a saxophonist following in the footsteps of some of the greatest jazz improvisers.
You're not going to do it any better than Coltrane and Charlie Parker, the era they were living in, what they came up in, their tradition, their cultural influences. We're not really going to be able to top what they did. But you can be the best at what you're trying to do. And that's what is so important. I think jazz, just like in any form, I think if you paid the proper respect and deference to the masters that have come before and try to fashion that into your own style, no one's going to ever be better at being you than you are. So I think it's really important to stay individual, copy only to the extent that you're getting some concepts together from the masters, but try to be your own voice as well.
So it seems that humility, embracing failure, and expecting nothing are the secrets. Let's consider anyone who made a hit single. They would say they never guessed a particular song would become a number one hit. If someone could possibly know, then their creative process would be changed, and then maybe the song would never be a hit. I know, it sounds just like a Star Trek episode. If you knew the future would change. But there truly is something about the unknown that makes the possibility of something great. So we can't know the future, but we can plan to fail. Planning to fail is built into the scientific method. So marketers and artists should do this too. Creating, or our attitude about creating, should be more about being wrong. Because until we get it right, we're going to be wrong more than we're right. Rocket Surgery Made Easy, a book by Steve Krug, is made about testing designs for websites and a comparison to anything creative. He says, always be testing, but he takes it one step further. Always be wrong. That's a hard concept for most of us to embrace. So he suggests to web designers, go make a make-believe website about something you plan to fail at. A website for cats, a website that predicts what day Aldi will run out of bananas, a website for shuttles to Mars, something ridiculous. The reader is prompted to build a website for a make-believe business. Go as deep as you want and be as wrong as you dare. Then go find some people, not friends, ask them to visit the website, hover over them, watch them, and see what they do. The only questions you ask them is, what is this website for? And what do you think? The exercise is about creativity, by watching how someone who doesn't have a stake in your work looks and reacts at what you made. And it helps you think about it from a point of view that is very different from what we usually think of as our creative process. It helps come through the creative process because most of the time our work is unfinished until it's finished. So by expecting failure, you begin to move through the process faster. As a musician, how are you going to apply this to our creativity? Let's say you want to learn to improvise, and you pick a song, let's say it's Satin Doll, and you would try learning to improvise, and then you would get feedback from a jazzer who does that sort of thing all the time, and the expectation to fail is certainly built in. If you want to compose something, you could write a piece and play it for people and ask their opinion. But the key is to not have your ego driving your emotions. Always be failing is a vehicle to help us overcome the devastation of our ego. If you are going to be testing the edges, this is the only posture to bring. Whatever you are testing, the idea Rocket Surgery teaches us is you find a safe way to test. Creativity flows when it's not threatened, and you don't wait until your work is finished before you show it to someone. Maybe once a month or a week, just create something that you want to fail, whether you show it to someone or not. Compose a piece that's never going to be performed, or go to the piano and improvise a nonsense composition, or play the Dvorak concerto with a ridiculous interpretation. Learning how to take your ego out of your work is a skill that takes time, but is needed to get to success. So this exercise in making a fake website is just a demonstration of the mindset a creator needs to cultivate. You want to make something cutting edge? Something radical and new? Exceptional work is done at the edges, and practicing at the edges is a skill we can learn. Ask your favorite improviser. So when you talk about going to the edges, here's one last idea I want to share from Eric that really made me appreciate the jazz idiom, or put it in a clear context. As an art form, jazz develops the ears and music theory on a high level, and it kind of defines itself.
The most intriguing thing about the jazz idiom remains, though, when you hear somebody improvise on the spot, you're not only hearing their technique and their training, their intonation, all those things, but you can also hear what they know about music, which is very particular to jazz in some ways. You can hear what they know about harmony, they can display it. I can tell within 10 measures of listening to a musician, 10 or 12 measures, I can tell what their influences are, how much they have together, what level they're at, pretty quickly that way.
So, ending on that perfect note from Eric, that's it for today. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it and find more episodes on accelerandocast.com. As always, thanks for listening, thanks for supporting live music, and see you next time.